Well, hello, you all. Welcome back to another Tech Doctor podcast. I'm Robert, one of the tech doctors, but I don't have the honor of living way out there on the West Coast in California. So I got to introduce another tech doctor, Allison Hartley. How are you today?
I'm doing okay, but the West Coast isn't always all it's cracked up to be, depending on where you live. We've had a lot of all over California, a lot of natural disaster type things this past couple of months, and now it's cold. So it's cold here in Napa.
Oh, I know. It's been terrible with mudslides and all kinds of fires and terrible things out there.
Yeah, it's been nuts. Hopefully things will settle down as 2018 goes on.
You all have been okay. I guess hadn't had personal problems yourself, or have you?
Yeah, thank goodness. You know, the fires, my office had to be closed for a week. They were kind of all around us, but luckily living in the downtown area, we were spared having to evacuate or anything.
Oh, good. That's scary stuff though, going on all around you like
that.
Yeah,
it was. It was definitely an experience I don't care to repeat.
Well, let's try not to have a scary podcast because we're really fortunate to have back with us today the author of many books in recent months, Anna Dresner. Anna, welcome back to the Tech Doctor podcast. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really pleased to be here.
Excellent. We want to remind everyone to please update your devices because of some of the bugs that have been found in microprocessors, the Spectre and Meltdown bugs, which can create problems for you under the right circumstances. And so the best way to deal with that right now is to update your Apple devices, your iOS devices, because Apple's releasing patches for these. And I don't think we need to go into any more detail about that, really, do you, Allison? It's hard to explain.
No, it's very, very technical. I did a lot of reading on the subject, and I still don't quite understand what all's been going on. So just patch. Everybody patch.
And also, I just wanted to touch base briefly on the big battery controversy that's going around and let everyone know, if you don't know, that Apple is offering a real deal. If you use one of the iPhone 6s or 6s's, 7, you can get a battery replacement for $29 from now until the end of the year. And so if you think you might want to keep your phone for a few more years, you might want to consider a battery replacement because it will give it good life for a long period of time. The only gotcha right now is that apparently it's very hard to get a battery because there have been so many requested. So, but this is kind of a controversial battery issue where Apple, I think, could have done a much better job of explaining what they were doing, but they, in iOS 10.2, started slowing down iPhones if they had a very bad battery that wasn't performing well anymore. They did that to keep the phones from shutting down randomly. And most people, I would argue, would probably rather have their phones slow down a bit than just randomly shut down. But Apple didn't explain it very well.
They didn't explain it well at all. First, they denied it. I remember first they denied it. And then they were like, well, yeah, this is kind of what we're doing. And then they explained it really well. But it took a couple of days during which the controversy just completely blew up.
All they would have had to do is, if your phone starts running slower, a message could pop up on your screen and say, your phone is being slowed down because your battery is not performing optimally. And we're trying to avoid your phone shutting down unexpectedly. To fix this problem, have your battery replaced, and have then a link to a page for more information.
That would be really nice.
There is going to be a feature in the next or in very recent versions coming out of iOS that is going to allow a person to get that message when that happens, but also allow you to have the choice of either keeping that feature on or of turning it off and letting your phone do what it does when it can't get the battery power that the processor needs. I don't personally think it's a great idea to give the people an option to turn it off, because I think that's going to lead to more controversy and frustration from people. But I guess we'll see if that totally comes to fruition or not.
Yeah, it's in beta now.
The other part of the controversy, which, you know, just really doesn't have any truth to it, honestly, is people are presenting Apple with lots of lawsuits, arguing that Apple is purposefully slowing the phone down so you'll be forced to buy a new phone.
That's just silly.
Yeah, that's never been the case, but that's been a conspiracy theory that's been out there for a long time.
Oh, yeah, ever since the original iPhone.
But as far as I know, Anna, there are three new books that we can talk about that don't have any real controversy or lawsuits or dreadful issues behind them. They're just good books. Let's start by talking about your education book.
All right. This one came out a couple months ago. I don't remember exactly when either. It is a collection of educational iOS apps, and it is meant to have something for everybody. So there are things for that might be more fun for kids. There are things about basic reading and writing kinds of stuff. There's developing your senses, like apps that help you learn about identifying bird songs or musical intervals. And there's current events and basically RSS apps and the TED app if you want to learn more about what's going on in the world and stuff. So basically, I was just trying to provide as varied a collection as possible so that hopefully anybody who wants to learn something can find something in there that would help them.
It's a really fun book. It kind of brought home to me how cool it is to be a kid in these times, to be a blind kid, because some of those education apps, especially for the really little ones, the Ballyland apps and stuff for learning voiceover, sounds super fun.
Yeah, they really are very cute. Like if you're in science, there's a periodic table app, which is really neat because since it can all be shrunk down and doesn't have to be shown in Braille, you can have a whole periodic table on the screen of your iPhone or the screen of your iPad. And you do need to have some way of kind of making sure that you're moving straight up and down a column or across a row. But if you can do that, you really can see on one page without having to flip back and forth and whatnot, how different apps relate to each other. And then you can double tap on one to get more information about it and that kind of thing. So there are definitely things like that that should be really helpful to people as they learn some of these skills.
That is too cool.
Yeah, there's just so much out there that you can learn from these apps. And I discovered that from reading this book. One thing about the kid-friendly ideas about it, you did spend a little time talking about how people can help simplify and protect kids by using some of the features in iOS. And another recent controversy that's going on right now is that there's a group of parents who have written a letter to Apple saying that Apple needs to take much more responsibility for making sure that their devices are protecting kids from things they shouldn't have access to on the internet and things like that. But you make a pretty good case in the beginning of this book, I think, for Apple has already done quite a bit to help parents control what their kids have access to. I'm just curious if you have any thoughts about that after exploring this a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think that the restriction screen really does give parents and teachers a lot of control because you can eliminate access to some apps altogether. You can eliminate different content, you know, make sure that explicit content isn't on there. Of course, that all depends on how well the content is rated in the first place. So there's no 100% guarantee. And obviously, if you've got especially a fairly young child using any of these devices, I would hope that some adult would be peeking in on them pretty frequently to make sure of what they're doing, because certainly it's easy enough. I remember teaching a class one time at the Carroll Center. We had some teenagers and somebody wanted a pen pal. And I thought, oh, fine. So we go Google pen pal. And all of a sudden, apparently there are a lot of people who have much kinkier associations with the word pen pal than I had any idea about. Boy. And we had these horrible screens pop up that none of us wanted. You know, and I just don't know. How would you protect against that? You know?
Yeah.
So I just don't think there's any 100%, but I definitely wanted to include what there is because you can certainly do stuff that helps. Sure. And a lot of search engines, of course, have ways to filter out content as well. And so at least letting people know what's built in, because restrictions really is pretty powerful.
You're right that parents and teachers have to be vigilant about what the kids are doing. But it's nice that you talk some about the options that people have in terms of restricting access to various parts of the device and all that. So, I mean, it's just something that people need to be maybe more aware of.
With small kids, I would just not give them access to Safari at all, you know, probably not the App Store, and just go download things for them so that you know what's there and what they've got access to. And then as they get older, you could phase in stuff.
Not that we can go through everything in the book, but you did mention that some apps that are good for kids to use if they want to learn to use VoiceOver. You talked about some reading and writing apps. There's some games that help people learn various skills in various ways. And you reminded us all that there are some built-in dictionaries. There's a lot here, honestly, that we either didn't know about or maybe had forgotten about.
Yeah, and I mean, this is really meant to be for adults as much as kids, because, yes, there is a app to help you learn Braille or help you learn the typing keyboard. But then there are apps like VoiceDream Writer that have some reasonably good spell check capabilities built in, and a thesaurus, and the ability to create an outline. So you could do some fairly complicated writing with that app. And, you know, some of the other apps as well. You know, some of the games, I think, or even the mental math kind of stuff might be really fun if you're in third grade, but they might also be really fun as an adult.
Yeah, no, there's not just the mental math, but there are also some apps in here that really help people learn math. And you talked about some of the pros and cons of how some of them work. But I mean, it seems like, I know, at least when I was a kid, and I went to public school, but when I was a kid, really learning math, and the teachers didn't really know how to teach me math very well, was a problem. And it's nice to see that there are some apps that maybe go a little way toward filling that gap a little bit.
There's a graphing calculator in there, which you really need to use the website as opposed to the iOS app to do this part. But if you put in an equation like y equals 2x plus 3 or something, it will then play an audio graph where the sound goes from left to right and gets higher or lower. So you can kind of get an idea of what that line is doing, for instance. There's also a Nemeth tutorial in there, which is really more geared for people teaching Nemeth. But if you're fairly ambitious and you just really need to learn more Nemeth in order to get into higher math, you might find that pretty helpful.
In the science and technology area, you talk about an app that I really enjoyed when it was going on is the Eclipse app.
That was so much fun.
With all the soundscapes. If you want a good overview of some really cool things that are out there educationally, this is a good way to find that out in this book. And this book, as well as the other two that we're going to be talking about in a second, they're all available from the National Braille Press. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. If you go to www.nbp.org, and you could just, probably the simplest thing if you're interested in more than one would be just to search for my name in the search box on the first page, or you could, like, that one's called How to Learn About Almost Anything. So you could search on those keywords.
Well, let's talk about the second book on my list here, which is the 10,000 Steps book, but you did not include a cane. People have to provide their own cane or dog or whatever they choose to take these steps. Sounds like, but you did include a lot of information about fitness.
There's sections on recorded audio type programming, some of which also have associated apps. I spent a fair amount of time on Eyes Free Fitness and Blind Alive. I mean, that's the same company. But anyway, they've done just such wonderful work. But not just them, because there's some other really good resources. And then there's a section specifically on apps, including a pretty detailed walkthrough of the Health app, because you can do a fair amount with just the Health app built into your phone. And then a section on fitness trackers, which is about the Apple Watch and Fitbit.
You know, I always forget about all the apps that are available. I'm so Apple Watch centric that it was good to be able to go through and realize, oh, not only the Health app, but all these other apps, yoga apps and stuff that are available.
Yeah, there's some nice variety out there. And, you know, some of them are pretty simple. Some of them are really complicated. But, like, I really like that app Move that just that reminds you every now and then during the day to do something. And then it gives you a proposed exercise. And if you don't want to do that one, you just do a two-finger double tap. And then until you get to an exercise you want to do, and then you do it. But because then you're doing different kinds of exercises, and maybe you're only doing it for a minute at a time. But if you're doing over the course of a day, if you do that four or five times and get up and do a couple of crunches or a couple push-ups or wall sit or climb a few flights of steps, you know, you're certainly more fit than you would be if you were just sitting there the whole time.
Absolutely. Even a little bit of movement throughout the day is so much better than nothing.
Yeah.
I was intrigued by the one that the 7-minute workout.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking I could maybe make myself do 7 minutes.
That is kind of a cool program because it starts out really basic and then just builds and builds and builds. I like that it works your whole body in one way or another in a very few minutes, which is pretty cool.
And it's on the Amazon Echo as well.
And if you're going through it on the Echo, it's like, if it tells you to do one and you're not sure how to do it, you can say help and it tells you. So that's pretty cool.
That's neat. Yeah.
So much on the Echo these days. I don't have one, but
you need to get one.
Just amazing, really, how much you can do with your voice these days. I always kind of forget because I'm so Apple Watch centric like you, Allison, always kind of forget about the Fitbit, but you do a fair amount of discussion of the Fitbit and the different options there are and how accessible it is through the iOS app. And so it's kind of nice, I think, to point out for people who haven't maybe thought about it or aren't aware that if you want to track your health, the Fitbit seems like a viable option for doing that.
Yeah, I thought so, especially because it is considerably cheaper. And then there's so many different varieties of them. So you really can decide, you know, how much you want to spend and what features are important to you. And they actually have a really nice little quiz on their website of what do you want a device to do? And you can fill that out and recommend stuff. At least I assume so. I haven't looked at the site since I finished the book, but at least at that time, it was like that. I'm sure you can get some of them used for considerably less as well. So if you're interested in a tracker and really don't want the expense or complexity of the Apple Watch. I mean, it's kind of a pain that you have to look up stuff in the app for most of your information, but you do get that tap on your wrist if it's been an hour and you haven't moved around. It is certainly a viable option as long as you have an iOS, or I assume it would work as well on the Android, but I don't know that for a fact.
You do discuss a few apps here that have to do with tracking sleep and trying to improve sleep, and even, you know, some ideas about how one might slow down and relax themselves and things like that. It seems like that's a really important issue these days, especially for blind people, is struggling with sleep.
I definitely wanted to include that as part of the whole discussion of fitness. There's a recording, this guy who does some really nice sleep exercises. There's one that's a set of acupressure. It's called Sleep Better, and you can get it from Audible. It has a section on acupressure and then a section of some yoga, and then one where you do some stretches, and then you get in bed and give yourself a little neck massage and face massage and stuff, and that's pretty cool. There's an app called Pzzz that will play sounds and try to help you relax that way, and some meditation apps and things. I definitely wanted to make sure that was... And it was an important part of the book because fitness is not just how in shape your muscles are, but also how you're feeling emotionally and whether you're getting sleep and that kind of stuff.
Allison, what are your thoughts about this book? What kind of reaction did you have to it, or what did you think about it?
Well, I liked it. I liked that it gave you a good overview overall of all the different options that we have now as blind people, everything from free or low-cost apps to the more expensive Apple Watch. So there was something for every budget and really every need that you can think of.
Kind of made me think I don't have so many excuses anymore for not exercising. If you want an overview, again, you know, I think this is a really good book to grab to find out what is out there. And almost certainly, you're likely to find something in here that would work for you. I encourage you to check it out. So now we get to the newest book, I believe, in this series of three that we're talking about, which is all about Apple Watch. And I think you've done it again, Anne, as far as I'm concerned. You wrote a book about something that I feel like I know a lot about, and I learned some things. So
same here.
Congratulations. You always find these tidbits that I forget about. But this book reminds me in some ways of your iPhone book, because mm-hmm. it really covers just about everything, in my opinion, that anyone would want to know about the watch. So tell us a little bit about it, if you will.
Well, thank you. I was asked to do an Apple Watch book that really is meant to help people get up and running. It is much more in depth than the other books, which we've been talking about, because they are more overview and pointing out a breadth of resources. And I'm glad you learned some stuff. I certainly did too, because for one thing, project like that, it's like, okay, let's read the manual. And
yeah,
there's always stuff buried in there that, you know, I think I last time I looked at the manual was probably when I got my first one. And I also listen to the Apple Watch podcast pretty regularly, and they often have interesting tidbits. And, you know, being on the VIPhone list, sometimes you'll hear something. I couldn't cover every single thing because we did want to keep it in under a volume, but I think it should give anybody, well, first of all, an idea of what the different kinds of watches are and how expensive they are, and then how to set it up and what some of the terms are, phases and complications and all that, and how VoiceOver works on the watch. And I was able to make it through pretty much all the apps, at least briefly, to talk about what they are. This is the built-in ones and how to use them, and then how to get more. And there's even a troubleshooting section at the end.
One of the things that I love about Apple Watch is the Taptic Time feature, where you can double tap on the screen and the watch will vibrate the time for you silently, so you can tell the time. But the downside of that feature sometimes for me is that I didn't realize for a long time, when you double tap the screen, the watch lights up.
Yeah.
So you think you're doing this secret thing, but suddenly everyone in the room has just realized you're doing something with your watch. But you reminded me that you can actually, using the phone, you can turn screen curtain on, which keeps the watch from lighting up. So I learned a few things like that, just kind of interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, I had honestly forgotten about screen curtain on the watch as well. And I tend to be very restrictive in what I use the watch for. I mainly use it for that Fitbit sort of counting steps, keeping track of my movement, seeing how I can close the rings, and getting the occasional notification. But it kind of reminded me, wow, there's a lot more that I can actually do with this watch if I wanted to.
Yeah, there are some really nice things, some of which are pretty simple. Like, I do knitting projects, and there's this app called Clicker, and all you do is click the screen and it counts. You know, it goes from one, you click it again, it goes to two. Well, if you're in a pattern that says do 10 rows of this and then switch, something like that that's just right on you, that keeps track of how many, is really useful.
Oh,
and it's
yeah.
very, very basic.
You do go into a little bit about how the Watch Series 3, if you have the cellular model, it's become in some ways more independent from the phone, where you can make phone calls or receive notifications if you're out and about, even if you don't have your phone with you. So it's nice to have a book that is really up to date with where Apple is. Of course, that doesn't ever last very long, because Apple's always coming out with the next thing. But it's really nice to have all this information, I thought, right here in one place.
That one just came out a couple of weeks ago, and they haven't done too much to the watch since then. So I did actually notice the other day that I was asking Siri something on the watch, and actually got a Siri voice. And that really surprised me. And that's not in the book, because that just happened. But at least that's pretty minor.
I think that was just in the latest little update that just came out.
One of the really nice things that we've had before this book came along, which you mentioned in the book, is Lisa Salinger's audio tutorial on the watch. And it seems to me that these two actually might complement each other pretty well, because people can certainly use the book as a reference and a quick way to look things up and a way to learn about some. There are things in the book that Lisa didn't cover in the tutorial, but the tutorial gives people a chance to actually hear her demonstrate some of these things. So I think anyone who wants really to learn the watch in detail, the book, you could certainly do it with just the book, but the book and Lisa's tutorial really might be a nice combination.
I agree. And of course, different people learn differently. So for some people, hearing how she demonstrates, which she does a very thorough job of doing, might just be exactly what they want. And for some people, if you just want to get the information more quickly, then you might want the book. And like you said, you might want both, especially if you're new to all of it.
Lisa's tutorial is at mysticaccess.com. I'll put a link for that in the show notes for people who want to look at it. What we really wanted to do was give people a chance to know about these books and to know that you can go to National Braille Press and check them out, and that there is a lot of good information here. So thank you for coming on and telling us about them, Anna.
Yeah, thanks, Anna.
Well, sure. Oh, I guess it was just one thing I just wanted to say was I had a lot of fun with a couple of friends with this book in some ways, like trying to figure out things like the digital touch and that kind of thing, because I did want to make sure that, you know, we explored some of that stuff, but also that we explored some of the really fun features and didn't make it too dry. So don't think that it's going to be just like reading the Apple manual, because I hope that it's a little more readable and fun than that.
Yeah, it is nice that you did have some fun with it and introduce a little humor there. So encourage everyone to go to National Braille Press and check them out. All right. Well, I think that will be a wrap for this episode of the Tech Doctor podcast. I want to thank you all for listening and staying with us here. And again, thanks a lot, Anna. And Allison, I will be seeing you on the next one, I'm quite sure. But until then, this is Robert, one of the Tech Doctors. I'll say so long for now.
And this is Allison, the other Tech Doctor, saying bye, everyone.